If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, it's 8:39, and it's Bronco Tuesday on a Wednesday. Bob Beeler joins us in the KBOI studio this morning, and it's swimming and diving today, as we have Coach Jeremy Kipp and senior swimmers Monica Bottleberg and Emma Chard, both from, one from Tacoma, one from Vancouver. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, I was wondering, before we get to the team, did you guys know each other in high school? Did you swim against each other? Are you, you know, from the same conference, rivals?
Did you know? We swam a little bit together. I remember swimming against Emma senior year of high school. Yeah. Is when, like, she kind of took off, and then all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, who is she?
I think the first time we met was high school
high
state.
High school state, yeah, I think so. And I forced you to take a picture with me.
Yeah.
And they took a picture again today. So
yeah,
another picture. They look pretty good together.
Now we're up to date.
Yeah.
Well, Jeremy, you've got the final home meet of the season, and I was looking at the list. Not a whole lot of home meets this year, but you got Wyoming coming in Friday afternoon late, 5 o'clock, and then day meet on Saturday. So tell us a little bit about last meet and what you're going to do to try to tune yourself up for the Mountain West.
Well, yeah, so Wyoming's a very good team, and I think last year they were fourth in the conference, and they're actually a really good matchup for us in terms of events. I mean, where they're good, we're actually good, so I'm looking forward to some really good racing. Friday night is an exhibition meet, and these are some events sometimes you come out of a training camp. This year we had, you know, we haven't competed in about a month and a half, and so same Wyoming's in the same boat, so we decided to do a Friday exhibition, do some off events. Normally you do 100 fly or 200 fly. So Friday night we're going to do some 50s and 150s. And we're actually going to wear some old technical suits, and we're going to practice just kind of racing, getting out fast, shaking off the rust. And then Saturday will be the real event. That'll be the 16 event traditional format. We'll actually start the first diving board at 10:30, and then we'll start the swimming events at 11. So it's going to be a really fun competitive weekend. And the seniors are putting their undefeated at home streak on the line. So I'll put a little pressure on the seniors this weekend as well.
All right, ladies, undefeated at home for how many meets?
Oh, all throughout the program's
ever.
History. Yeah.
You've never lost at home.
Nope, never.
Damn.
So, pressure. Emma, why do you think this team is so good at home? I mean, is the water in your lanes special or anything? I mean,
got a current.
I definitely think we keep that in mind, like coming into a home meet. It's a huge, I mean, I personally think it's a huge pride thing to keep our streak going, and seeing as like previous like programs have kept it going, like we just want to keep that going. So
we've talked about different sports with different home advantages. Monica, is there such a thing as a home pool advantage? Do pools swim differently? Do you feel differently when you swim in a different pool?
I don't know if it's necessarily like a pool, but I think being able to like be home and be like with your friends coming and cheering and being able to sleep in your own bed and just kind of not having that aspect of actually traveling somewhere, I think that does give it a home advantage.
Yeah, for us at the YMCA, what's funny about the Y, we have a great relationship with them, but, you know, there are, during meets we close the facility, but there is a huge water slide. You know, there are some other elements of a facility that where you normally wouldn't walk into a university complex and see a lot of those things. So I think a lot of teams get kind of caught looking around, and while they're busy looking around, you know, we're kind of lining up, watch out for the right hook, you know. And so we get them kind of catching looking around. A lot of people have never been to Boise before, and I think they're kind of surprised when they get here. You know, we're at kind of light elevation, 2,500 feet, which in theory doesn't affect you, but if you're coming from, you know, San Diego and things like that, they'll definitely feel it. Obviously, coming out of Laramie, that they're coming down here. But I think there's a lot of factors that people don't kind of expect, and we kind of catch them sleeping a little bit.
What are your best events? What do each one of you swim in?
I'm more mid-distance to distance freestyle.
I swim sprint, free, and fly.
Emma's being a little modest. Emma's the reigning conference champion in the 200 freestyle, and she was runner-up in the 500 and the mile last 2 years. And Monica's been a really stalwart of the sprint and butterfly. And actually, last year, Monica took one for the team. She did a very hard event, 200 fly. that no one else really wanted to swim, and because the event was kind of wide open. So she took one for the team last year, certainly. So they're being a little modest here.
One thing I was going to say we have not mentioned, which is probably should have been the lead of the story, this is the defending Mountain West champion team. We have Jeremy Kipp, who is the two-time Coach of the Year in the Mountain West in his third season. So what's the feeling when you're at a Mountain West Conference championship meet and you guys are winning scoring points and knowing you're going to win? Because you guys last year won that championship and you can try to defend this year.
Yeah, last year, I feel like coming off of the previous year was really hard. And so I knew like that coming into conference last year that we just like I didn't want to think about how like the results were going to be. I like even like the last day I was like, okay, well, I don't know, like we still could, something can happen. So until like the very end, that's when I like realized that like, okay, we're going to win. So that's great.
And I think we really do a good job as a team, like focusing on the individual racing instead of like getting distracted with the big picture. And it's like, it's very exciting. Conference is one of the most fun meets like you'll ever go to. Everyone's cheering. It's loud. There's just so much going on, and so I think we do a really good job of like just really focusing in on what's going on at that moment.
Talking with Boise State swimming and diving coach Jeremy Kipp.
ABOI.
All right, we are back. Boise State swimming and diving coach Jeremy Kipp is with us here this morning. Coach, you take on Wyoming exhibition on Friday night, on Saturday a scoring meet, traditional meet, and then you basically morph from there into the conference championships, which are in the middle of next month. Your meet prior to this one was like in November.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, it's. I was telling Bob, you know, we've had a couple of the universities we usually schedule with, we kind of we were missing weekends a little bit, so we went to more of a training model. You know, Bob asked a question about the championship, and one of the things that makes every year so so unique is that every team is really different. This year we have 10 freshman swimmers and two divers, and we put a little more importance on the training and the training camp and that period between the invite in November to now. And it's been pretty hard, I think the seniors can attest. I mean, the training has been... It's been getting a little grinding, and it's been getting a little monotonous. So we're kind of coming out of this period, I think, pretty hungry, ready to face somebody else for a little while. And, yeah, we're looking forward. I mean, this is a good team. We've really gelled. If you asked me at the beginning of the season what was the team identity, I couldn't really tell you. I think this year it's a really tough, it's a really deep, really competitive group of girls. So it's going to be a lot of fun the next few weeks.
Monica, from now until the Mountain West meet, how much better can you get? How much can you... trim your time, shave your times, as I guess it probably depends on the length of the event. But what? How much better can you get in the next, what is it, a month? Less than a month, 3 weeks?
I'm going to get so much better. I only have like a month left, and it's just going to be great. I'm going to swim super fast at conference, right, and I'm going to come out with best times. but I can't tell you how much faster I'm going to be in a month. But as long as I keep doing what I'm doing, keep working hard, I'll turn out great.
Jeremy, is it something that from now to then, I guess sometimes in some events, 1 second could be a ton of time to improve, right?
Yeah, it's a huge. I mean, I was telling you, you know, Emma in the 500 can probably drop anywhere from 10 to 15 seconds. And, you know, Monica, I wouldn't be surprised to see her drop 2 seconds in 100 fly, which is, you know, that takes you from 16th place to like a 7th place, which is huge in the morning. And, you know, then you get a chance to just race at night. And, you know, like when Monica said, you know, they do a really good job of focusing on the process. I mean, I think if you get a little too caught up in the results or the times, you can drive yourself crazy. I mean, they're already pretty type A, pretty successful girl. I mean, the GPA is 3.5, so you don't have to do a lot to sorry, 3.6. Sorry. So the intrinsic motivation is not something you have to really, you know, pound into them. So they're already pretty fired up.
Maybe not in the next month, but how much of each of you improved, do you think, since you got out of high school, say?
For me, it's a little different. I've been really successful in just maintaining. I had a really successful high school career. I've still had some best times over my college career, but I've sort of had a little different experience. But Emma crushed it.
Yeah, I didn't really swim these events in high school at all, really. So coming to college was like a new experience for me, swimming these events. And so every year I've gotten like a little bit better. So I hope to keep doing that.
So what are you swimming now that you didn't swim in high school? And what did Coach see and you say, you know what, she could be a conference champion in this meet at this event?
Well, I used to sprint freestyle, and then I used to do breaststroke and IM.
Then I warned her not to swim distance, and then she swam the 500 one time, and it was all downhill.
It was basically like a practice meet. I swam the 500, and I guess it was from then on. So just basically I've just increased the distance and gone away from...
Yeah, Emma was recruited as a 50 freestyler / 100 breaststroker, and she's doing the mile now, which is like being recruited to be the starting quarterback, and now you're blocking wedges on the kick return. So, okay. One thing I'll say, Monica, I don't know how much you'll want to share. You know, Monica is a cancer survivor. You know, we do some outreach things with Monica, and, you know, like she said, her journey has been a lot different. And, you know, that's part of the journey in college. You know, sometimes you come in thinking one thing, you know, if your goal is just to get back to where you are, that's still a really it's a valuable goal. It's important. And, you know, where someone like Emma comes in thinking one thing and she's graduating as another team captain. So it's pretty fascinating, the journeys that they all take and the impact they have on each other with those stories.
Jeremy Kipp, Monica Bottleberg, Emma Chard from Swimming and Diving with us today. It's 8:52.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI. Rush Limbaugh, this morning at 10 on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back defending Mountain West champion Boise State swimming and diving in the house.
All right, guys, what's it going to take to win the championship? We've got a couple minutes left. That's the goal. Everybody wants to win the conference championship. So, Coach, what about it?
Take about 1,300 points, to be honest, and, you know, when it all breaks down, it just really doing as well as you can. The girls are, I believe, in the best shape of their lives. They look really great. They're swimming really well. We had a practice yesterday. I told, Monica and a few of the girls that the times they were putting up were far from pedestrian, and so we just have to go in and take care of business, do our thing.
Any specific goals, Emma, three-peat for you in the 200?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm trying not to like think about it too much because it does stress me out a little bit. But I just try not to like think about it. I just try and race. So, yeah.
What event is going to be your best? Do you think, Monica?
You know, all of them. I'm not sure. I'm really excited for my 100 fly this year. We haven't quite set exactly what I'm going to swim at conference yet, but I feel like the 100 fly could be good.
Does the fact that you're the defending champion help that experience?
Yeah. It also, like, I feel like sometimes it puts a target a bit more on my back, which is fine, but it just, something that I have to think about when I race is that, like, people are going to be, like, I mean, everyone's always out to, like, win, but, yeah, so.
All right, Jeremy Kipp, Monica Bottleberg, Emma Chard have been our guests. It's 8:56.
If you're talking about it...
They don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning. It's 9:06. Paul J. and Chris, special guest. In the next title studio this morning, Carrie Overall, the president of the IEA, elected in 2017 after 13 years as a teacher at South Junior High School in Boise. Carrie, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Legislature in session now. What are going to be the key issues for education?
Well, one of the key issues always is funding. Mm-hmm. How much will the legislature increase funding this year? The career ladder, the allocation model that we fund teachers by, we're hoping they continue to fund the fourth year of that allocation model. And we're also hearing talk of potentially vouchers coming up in this legislative session.
Now, the IEA is against vouchers. Can you tell us why?
So currently, Idaho is 50th out of 51 states in per pupil expenditure. So we don't spend nearly enough per student in educating our children. And we believe firmly that public dollars should be used for public schools, not private schools. So anytime you talk about vouchers, you talk about siphoning money away from a very small pot of money currently to fund private schools. And currently, private schools don't have the oversight, accountability, or accessibility that public schools have. We believe the State Board and the State Department do a good job of overseeing our public schools and holding them accountable, and private schools don't have that same accountability.
You have spent your life in education, basically in the Boise area.
I have.
You taught at South, graduated from Boise, have degrees from Ricks College and the University of Idaho, been an active member of the Boise Education Association. Idaho struggles to recruit and retain teachers, especially in rural areas. What are you doing to try to keep those teachers back here in the state?
Well, in my first 6 months in office, I've spent a great deal of time traveling the state, meeting with educators from the north, the south, the east, making sure that I understand the issues. Because as you said, I have spent a lot of my career in the valley, and it's important that I visit as many schools as possible so I can be able to explain what those conditions are like. And as we look at our rural communities, they do struggle to recruit and retain the best educators possible. The communities are small. Often those communities can't pass bonds or levies to supplement salaries for educators. And with a smaller student base, they also have a smaller funding base. And so they don't have the ability to be as competitive with salaries that larger urban districts can. And so as we look at the career ladder, most of the money has tended to be funneled into the first rung, so for early career educators, but those educators at the top have largely been left out. And so we're encouraging the legislature strongly to fund the top rung of the career ladder so that experienced veteran educators don't leave rural communities, don't leave the state, and go other places.
How did those particular teachers get left behind in the first place?
So in the original career ladder model, it was suggested that they fund the career ladder on a $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 model. The legislature didn't like that price tag, and so they said, well, let's fund it step by step over a five-year period, and that will help ease the burden of paying for it. And so the last 3 years, they've put money into the lower rungs, but not the top rung. Instead, they created something called a master educator premium where teachers could apply for a bonus based on a portfolio they create. This is the first year that teachers are compiling that portfolio with the possibility of receiving that money next year. But again, you're still leaving out a large portion of teachers by making them apply for something rather than simply putting money at the top for every teacher to have access to.
What are some of the ideas to help teachers in districts in rural areas?
We believe firmly that the state needs to fully fund a mentoring and support program for early career educators. Currently, the state mandates that districts provide mentoring, but doesn't fund it. And so as a result, many of our smaller or rural districts don't provide mentoring. And so the teacher pipeline report just came out last month, and Idaho has a 15% attrition rate. So 15% of teachers leave within their first 5 years. And we believe strongly that that is because of a lack of support within those first 5 years. And so we believe that if we paid for mentoring and paid for induction and provided support programs, we would be more likely to keep educators in the classroom longer. We're also working on a bill this legislative session for loan forgiveness for those who teach in rural or low-income schools, helping them pay off what is the rising cost of student loans could help entice them to stay in smaller districts with smaller salaries. The teacher pipeline group also said we need to look at housing allowances, different innovative ways to encourage educators to stay in these smaller communities.
Tell us more about that teacher pipeline group. You've made some recommendations to the state board.
We have.
Who are the group and what are the recommendations?
So the group was made up of educators and then members of education stakeholders groups. So the school boards, the administrators, the business community, members of the state board, legislators met for over a year and looked at education, looked at why we're struggling as a state, and ultimately made a series of recommendations to the state board, which the state board adopted at their meeting in December. That a large portion of that report does look at Idaho's numbers, our teacher shortage, districts that struggle more than others. And a large portion of that report said we have to be more competitive with how we pay educators, and we have to start looking at ways to support teachers. So a lot of it focused around mentoring. The recommendations focused around, you know, getting creative about how we pay teachers. And I can't speak for certain on behalf of the board, but I'm fairly confident the board will be presenting that report to the legislature this session, and hopefully legislators will take a serious look at that and make policy recommendations around it.
We're talking with Carrie Overall, the president of the Idaho Education Association, elected about 6 months ago. KBOI News Time, 9:13.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul Jay and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
Carrie Overall is our guest, the president of the Idaho Education Association. The governor has given his State of the State address. What is the reaction that the Idaho Education Association has to the things he said?
Well, we haven't seen all the details yet of his budget proposal. We're looking forward to hearing those next week. But we are pleased with the increase in the K-12 budget. But we believe they could do more. It's a good tax year. Idaho's economy is doing well. And we believe that we need to invest in public education and continue to move up beyond that 50th out of 51 per pupil spending. We do like the increased literacy money. We believe that's important for those early grades. We would like to see potentially fewer line items so that districts have more flexibility in how they spend their money. And we would like to see discretionary funding increase. But overall, we believe that the amount asked is a good start, and we hope that the legislature will put even more into it.
What does the IEA do to help support and train teachers in the state?
One of IEA's primary goals is to provide free professional development for all of our members. We have a free summer institute every summer. We're going on to our sixth year of that. Members come for 3 days, and it's taught by teachers, two teachers from across the state. And it's all about what works in your classroom, what more support and help do teachers need. And we hear great reviews about it. Then throughout the year, we also offer monthly professional development classes across the state, again, free to our members to help them increase their craft, improve, and continually grow so that students and student growth and achievement are continually improving across the state.
You mentioned fewer line items would be a good idea in the budget. What are some things that certain districts need that others don't?
Well, I don't know that I necessarily want to get into like nitpicking what they do and don't need. But, you know, we fund math, we fund reading, we fund technology. And it may be perhaps that one district only needs this much for technology and needs this much. They need more for literacy. But when they're broken into you can only spend this much, that's where you kind of tie the hands of districts a little bit. And so the legislature could say, here are our priorities. Here's what we need you to get done. And then trust districts to improve student achievement based on that pot of money that they have. And so giving them more ability to say, well, we need to spend a little more in this area versus a little more in that area.
You mentioned you've traveled around, talked to a lot of legislators, teachers, members of the press, et cetera. What is the attitude of the average teacher in the state of Idaho?
Well, first of all, you have to, like, the results show people across the state love public education. They love their teachers. When we look at polling results, educators are beloved by the public, by parents, by students. And when we talk to educators, they love their job. They love their students. There are many days that they feel like there's too much paperwork, too many hoops to jump through. They just want to be able to teach their students. Oftentimes, they're spending more time doing paperwork than actually just getting in there working with their kids. And they feel like they could be more effective if they were trusted a little bit more and given that freedom to do what is best for the students in their class.
What can be done to alleviate that?
Well, I think it goes back to what we talked about before with so many line items and the legislature being a little more flexible and saying We want student growth. We want student achievement. And we're not going to tell you exactly how to do that. But as long as you're performing, then we're going to be okay with that. I think the legislature has been so hyper-focused on, well, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this. And in going through all those hoops, it actually impedes teachers' ability to be successful in the classroom. And if maybe they pulled back some of those reins and gave teachers a little more flexibility, then student growth would continue to rise as it has been the last few years.
Technology in some of the smaller communities. I know that we have well into the triple digits the number of school districts we have in Idaho. Not exactly sure how many. But,
yeah.
How do some of the smaller ones feel about technology, about getting more technology and more specializations, more teachers? Maybe they can take classes online, things like that.
So we have over 150 districts across the state, and I'm actually on a computing technologies work group with other stakeholders where we're looking at how do we increase technology and computer science opportunities for students. And one of the things we've talked about is that the legislature has funded technology for high schools. It hasn't funded it for lower grades. And so our high schools tend to have the equipment, tend to have Wi-Fi, tend to have those kind of capabilities. Many of the rural and smaller elementary schools across the state do not. I've heard stories of some that they don't even have phones in classrooms.
Yeah.
And so the legislature needs to start looking at how do we increase infrastructure. The Idaho Education Association doesn't believe that taking classes online should replace a teacher, but we believe it should be a tool in the classroom that educators should have access for. Educators we talk to want to be able to use technology, but again, it's having access to it and then also having the time and professional development to figure out what tools are best for student achievement.
Moving female students into traditionally male subjects, how is that coming along? It's been talked about, voted on for a long time. Is it working?
I don't have concrete numbers to say whether it's working or not, but I know that we have the STEM Action Center. And I've met the director, Angela. She is fabulous. And the group I worked with, this computing technologies group, when they talk about it, they believe it. The work they're doing is making a difference, encouraging females to go into typically male subjects, as you say. In my 13 years teaching, I saw a number of young ladies that were excited about science, technology, engineering, math opportunities. We've had partnerships with Micron to bring students out there and learn about those opportunities. And I think the work we're doing is good. Could we do more? Absolutely. But we're definitely on the right track toward encouraging more young ladies to go into those areas.
Our guest, Carrie Overall, the president of the Idaho Education Association, thank you very much for joining us this morning on KBOI. And we wish you a very successful year and good luck, too, in the legislative session.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
All right. KBOI News Time is 9:26.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 3, listen to Nate on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 9:38. Today's just roared on by because we've been busy.
Yeah, we wanted to thank Carrie Overall, the president of the Idaho Education Association, for joining us. We also talked to some members and coach from the swimming and diving team at Boise State.
Been a busy day.
Mm-hmm.
Busy day. All right. They're going to shut the government down now, huh?
Well, possibly.
Why?
Well, it's over DACA. And it's kind of interesting because right now both sides, and by that I mean Democrats and Republicans, are going on television at various times and saying that it's the other side that doesn't want to do DACA.
It's funny how they make the same problem sound so different.
DACA was an Obama thing. The Democrats want to continue it. And the Republicans say, okay, we're willing to continue it too. But in order to continue it, we also need to fund the wall on the southern border. And the Democrats say, well, no, we don't want to fund a wall on the southern border. We don't, think that's a good idea. And the Republicans are saying, well, I guess you don't want DACA. So, because you're not willing to compromise. which, I mean, it's a little bit, I mean, to a Democrat, it is like the Republicans are saying, well, I will give you a cheeseburger, but you have to let me smash you in the knee with a bat. And then you say, well, no, I don't want that. And so they say, I guess you don't want lunch. Well, yes, I do want lunch. I just don't want to be smashed in the knee with a bat. Well, it's probably not that physically taxing. However, the Republicans would like to get two things done. The Democrats want to get one thing done and don't want the other one necessarily to ever happen. So they're kind of at an impasse. And I think the Republicans have it. There are enough Republicans in Congress right now that they can simply kick the can down the road a little bit with the government and say, OK, we'll temporarily fund it for another month or so. But as far as permanently funding things, the Democrats have to be in there to vote, too. And if they don't, it will shut down the government. And I don't think that anybody's going to blink on this one necessarily. You know, the president ran a lot of what he had to say was the border wall. And he thinks it's a very fine idea. And like I said, most of the Republicans think it's also a very fine idea. And the Democrats don't think it's a fine idea, but they definitely want to fund DACA. Meanwhile, there are a lot of things that are happening. There was a guy here over the weekend, very, very well publicized, who has lived in this country for 30 years, came here when he was 9 with his family, was brought to the United States illegally, but has been here for 30 years and was deported. Well, he has a family now. He's got a couple of kids, and they're, well, the kids are American citizens, and so is the wife, but he's not, so he was deported. And that keeps being brought up, that things like that are happening. And
yeah, the one I
basically
saw.
Basically, both sides are looking at the other and saying, this is your fault because we're not getting anything done. So when both sides are looking at the other and saying, this is your fault because we're not getting things done, the one thing I do know for sure is nothing is getting done.
The one I saw was an illegal Hispanic woman who was like 35,
mm-hmm.
who was brought here when she was 15 illegally.
So she's been here 20 years.
She's been here 20 years. She has 3 automotive shops. She employs something like 60 people.
Yeah.
And all of the shops are making money, paying taxes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But she is worried that she's going to be deported. What is it, a month? When it runs out in a month?
Yeah, and the thing is, people have a point. People have a point on both sides of this argument, which is why it's such a difficult argument. You know, if you have been in the United States for decades and have been working and productive and raising a family and things like that, are you an American? Well, to a certain extent, you definitely are. On the other hand, if you came here illegally, should you be deported? Well, to a certain group of people, you certainly should, because you broke the law. And if you're not going to uphold the law, why do you even have it? So you see, both sides are saying, well, this isn't good.
And both sides have a point.
Exactly. This is where that, you know, that chief from the movie Dances with Wolves would say, this is a very difficult problem, and we'll talk about it some more. But they're going to talk about it for the rest of our lives, at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, will anything ever be settled?
I don't know. I just wonder if, we've been threatened with government shutdowns before, and the sky has never fallen.
Okay, Bob sent me an instant message here, and I agree with him. He says the government never shuts down. All essential services keep working.
True.
Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, etc. Then all people on leave get back pay. It's phony. And the part I agree with is there is a difference between essential services and non-essential services in the government. The only problem is, the way I look at it, about 80% of it's non-essential.
Yeah.
I don't mean that to sound, you know, sarcastic.
But you did, and it is. and it's the government is so big.
Yeah.
It would almost be worth shutting the government down if we didn't, you know, make up with the back pay, et cetera, et cetera. Just shut it down. Okay, we don't pay for February.
Yeah.
Look at all the damn money we've saved.
Yeah. Except
if you work for the government, except you don't think that's a swell idea.
In this country, the way we have set it up, if the government isn't paying Americans various amounts of money, and that includes people who work for the government, which is the largest employer,
yeah,
and other people who get money for various reasons, if the government isn't paying that, then the money is not out there circulating, which, by the way, is how the economy works. And so the government shuts down, the economy tanks, kind of, maybe.
All right.
Thanks for the memories.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Rocky of Napa is on the line. Rocky.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Listen, you were talking about that person that was over here for I don't know how long and has got a great job. Still not a citizen of the United States.
Right.
And why not, I ask. But it's like the analogy because you can go to church and call yourself the Christian, but that doesn't make you a Christian.
Yeah. Or the colorful way to put it.
They're not citizens. They're coming here to the United States, and how she got that to where she's at.
Right.
Probably because of welfare. There's some government operation had to give that to her. She didn't get it from herself. So
that part I don't know about necessarily.
Well, I don't either. I'm speculating because.
But again, I mean, you're on the side of if somebody broke the law to get here, then they should be escorted out.
If they don't bother becoming a citizen, I say, hey, you don't even care about the United States. All you care about is yourself and your and how much you can get off of us. If I know people that were in our church that were from Bulgaria, I believe,
mm-hmm.
doctors. They went and they tried to. The lawyer made a mistake on their visa thing,
right?
And the government deported them. And they had a great job here. They weren't here to become citizens.
Right.
They were here to help out. And,
you can see, though,
easy targets.
Rocky, I appreciate the call, but you can see, I think, and that's the point of a lot of these people who have been here for so many years, that they never actually went to register for anything, because when you register, the first thing you have to admit is that you came into the country illegally, and then you are escorted out of the country instead of things working out for you. And again, I don't necessarily condone that. We have something to give away, and let's do that right now. We have one pair of tickets to tonight's basketball game, Boise State against Utah State at Taco Bell Arena. The game is at 7 o'clock. We will give those to caller number 6. We have one pair to give away. Caller number 6 right now at 208-336-3711.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Now you can text Paul J. and Chris. Text your message to 208-336-3700. Standard text rates apply. Sponsored by Diamond Heating and Cooling.
All right, we are back. Let's quickly go to the phones and Roy. Roy, good morning.
Good morning. On this immigration debacle, I remember, well, when Reagan put through in his era that did amnesty, and after amnesty, it was supposed to be that a wall was going to be built, immigration was going to be rewritten so that they would not have this issue. And unfortunately, and I'm not going to point at the Democrats only, both sides over the years when they had the legislature did not fund or build the wall. They did not completely rewrite the legislation that's necessary to allow people to get into the United States properly. And so these people that have been here 20 or 30 years, if they came after amnesty, that's a bad choice because... the whole idea was that after amnesty, they wouldn't be coming.
It was kind of a last chance program that said, "Fine, if you're here right now and here illegally, then you can come down. You can apply for citizenship. You won't be deported. You won't be arrested, assuming you don't have a criminal record or not wanted for something."
That was
going to be it. And after that, we were going to have a fairly tight system. And of course, it's just kind of continued the way it always was.
Yeah, and it's very unfortunate because these folks that have been coming in after that, if we had written the immigration laws or kept them from being able to come in, they wouldn't be in this situation.
And so, yeah, now that they are here, they did come after that, then it's kind of a mixed, it's like, well, they shouldn't be here. But at the same time, either side has written the legislation. So what to do with it now? It's going to be a tricky one. But shutting the government down, you're going to be pointing back and forth who did it, who didn't, and both sides are to blame.
All right. Appreciate that call.
Yeah, we are out of time, unfortunately. We'll talk maybe more about this tomorrow when we have a little more time. KBOI News Time, 9:55. That'll do it for the show today. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't forget, basketball action tonight. Pregame 6:30, tip-off at 7 o'clock. BSU, Utah State.